Today's guests on Meet the Press are the Defense Minister of the Federal Republic of Germany, Franz Josef Strauß, who is currently visiting this country. He is certain to have a key role if hostilities break out over West Berlin. Along with Wilhelm Rabe, the German ambassador to the United States. Our panel, Sander Van Oker, NBC News, Richard Wilson, Cole Publications, Peter Lissagore, Chicago Daily News, and Laura T. Sivak. Ned Brooks will moderate.
With the Berlin crisis commanding world attention, we have as our guests today two representatives of the German government. The Defense Minister, Mr. Franz Josef Strauß, has been touring the United States, visiting defense plants, and conferring with our defense officials. He has been a member of the German Parliament, the Bundestag, since 1949, and he was appointed to the Defense Ministry in 1956. Ambassador William Graya is a lawyer and a law professor. He played a major role in drafting the post-war treaties between Germany and the Allied powers, and he is regarded as his country's foremost expert on these agreements. We're ready now to start the questions, Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Minister, several years ago, you believed that a limited war in Europe was not possible. Do you still believe that?
We think, as we have done in former years, that we should do everything to eliminate war, that means fighting, regardless with what weapons. We should eliminate it as a means of policy. And therefore, we have decided to make a fair contribution to NATO, to the shield forces of NATO, to increase the deterrent effect. Because the deterrent effect is not only based upon the big nuclear weapons, the deterrent effect is based upon a gapless military defense system.
Well, Mr. Minister, in 1959, you said, and these were your words, and I quote them, a limited war in Europe is not possible. And my question is, do you today think it is possible? And the reason I ask you that is we are all building up conventional forces in Europe. Do you think a limited war makes any sense in Europe if one should come?
I must once more emphasize that deterrent effect is based upon a gapless defense system, including strong conventional elements, including a tactical nuclear capability, and including a strategic nuclear capability represented by Strategic Air Command, the British Bomber Command, ICBMs, and so on. And we should do everything to eliminate war. And we should not think in terms of a limited war, which could mean that we invite an aggressor to make a limited war.
Mr. Minister, about an hour ago on another program, Senator Fulbright, who is chairman of our Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said that the Germans are not doing enough in their own defense. Do you think you are doing all you can do?
What we have to do, what we have not to do, that is laid down in agreements and is laid down in a NATO document called MC70. There is an appendix with a breakdown. In the breakdown, there is a chapter Germany. In this chapter Germany, the annual force goals are fixed. And we have made strenuous efforts to meet the annual force goals. And I am in the position to say that we nearly have met all years our force goals.
You have a conscription only, for example, of 12 months. And I believe your forces are only about 80% at authorized strength. Are you planning to increase the length of your subscription, for example, conscription?
We shall do everything to meet our NATO commitments.
Mr. Lissagore.
Mr. Minister, I'd like to ask the same question that Mr. Spivak asked in another way. You seem to suggest in your answer to him that Berlin will not be solved in a showdown by military means. Did you mean to imply that?
I would like to say that the Berlin problem is not primarily a military problem. Of course, military aspects cannot exclude it entirely. But Berlin is a political problem, and we should do everything short of war to solve the Berlin problem, to maintain Western rights in Berlin before a military action is seriously considered.
Well, Mr. Minister, the President of the United States has suggested that we are willing to do everything short of war, but we must be necessary for war if Premier Khrushchev continues to press us and threaten our rights in Berlin. Now, I'd like to ask you if you think, again following Mr. Spivak, if you think that if that showdown should occur, can we limit to conventional weapons a war in the heart of Germany?
I think it would be very unwise to play the role of a prophet, to play the role of a wise guy who knows all answers. Because maybe we can decide what we want to do, but we cannot decide what the Soviets are going to do. And the way how we have to react depends upon what the Soviets are doing.
But Mr. Minister, mustn't we be ready for every possible contingency in the Berlin crisis in the coming months?
I couldn't agree more.
Mr. Van Oker.
Mr. Ambassador, you're credited, whether rightly or wrongly, with preparing a memorandum in 1959 on which the Allies proposed certain arrangements for a possible reunification of Germany, a confederation of a kind, be followed by mutual exchanges between East and West Germans, and possibly at the end, free elections. Does that memorandum still have any efficacy for the present situation in Germany?
If I understand your question correctly, you mean the Western Peace Plan,
right,
which has been drafted by the three Western delegations and the Federal German delegation in the preparation for the Geneva Conference. And I think it has been very clearly stated in our own replies to the Soviet Union and to Mr. Khrushchev several weeks ago, as well as in the American answer to Mr. Khrushchev, that this Western peace plan of 59 is a solid basis which always can serve as a basis for further discussions.
Mr. Ambassador, Chester Bowles, the Undersecretary of State, said on this program last week to think of reunification now was fantasy. The President did not use it in his speech on Tuesday night. And in that connection, the European economic community is growing at a very great rate, a viable community. It may take Britain into it. If this succeeds, as it must, from all evidence, isn't this the surest way to prevent any unification of Germany? Khrushchev would never allow, would he, a reunited Germany tied to a Western community?
As far as I can see, Mr. Khrushchev in the foreseeable future will not allow German reunification on the basis of free elections, whether we include Great Britain, whether we adhere to the common market or not. There's no much difference. And we feel that the strengthening of the West European community, of the common market, and the inclusion of Great Britain in the long run will strengthen the Western position, and by this means will also strengthen the prospects for future reunification. We still believe that reunification is a realistic concept, and we will adhere to this concept, and we think at least it is as realistic as Mr. Khrushchev's claims to Berlin and other parts of Europe are.
But each step you take in the development of the European Economic Community takes Germany, West Germany, further into a Western situation, doesn't it? And precludes in the long run any turning about of your economy, your political institutions, toward a reunification. That is correct, isn't it?
If I may come back to the Geneva conference of 59, I had a very interesting discussion with Mr. Gromyko in 59, exactly on the point of the common market. And in this respect, the Soviets were quite willing to say that the common market organization didn't interest them so much, and that the inclusion of Germany didn't matter very much in this respect.
Mr. Minister, did you have a comment on that?
I think we should not think in terms of a wrong alternative, because the alternative is that Germany joins the common market or joins the European unification, then German reunification is impossible. Or Germany decides to be neutral between East and West, and then Soviet Union admits a democratic Germany. This choice is rather unrealistic. There was only one term fixed by the Soviets, and I think that was true all the years down since 1945 up to now. And this choice was to accept a communist regime in Germany, in the whole of Germany. That means reunification upon Soviet terms, or to have no reunification. But I bluntly refuse to accept an alternative which never was made by the Soviets, which never was shown to us by the Soviets. That was only made in Western plans, in some Western plans, not in official ones, in newspapers, in magazines, in some discussions and so on, that the Germans have to decide between Europe on one side or German unification on the other side. There is not one statement from the Soviet side which proves that such a choice was ever a reality.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Minister, Mayor Willy Brandt of West Berlin has stated that he has been quoted as stating that he did not think the present crisis in Berlin would lead to war, limited or otherwise. Do you share that view?
Would not lead to a war?
Yes.
I wouldn't like to be a prophet, but my impression is that the Russians do not want war and are afraid of a military showdown, at least in the same way we are afraid. Because if a military showdown would come up, everything would be at stake, not only for us, also for the Russians. If you think of the speech of Mr. Khrushchev in February 56, his famous speech against Stalin, he attacked Stalin very strongly because Stalin's policy 39, 40, 41 led up to war and to the destruction of a big area of the Soviet Union. That was the main attack of Khrushchev against Stalin. I think that the Russians do not want a general war or a major war. A major war which includes the risk of a short-run escalation up to an all-out war.
Yes.
And therefore, if we show the determination the American president has made evident in his speech, we shall achieve negotiations upon reasonable terms.
Yes. Now, on that point, the president has estimated that since the first of the year, American defense appropriations will have been increased by the sum of $6 billion, largely in response to the communist threat in Berlin and elsewhere. Is the West German government making any comparable increase in its military expenditures?
The Federal Republic of Germany is a part of NATO and has to meet the force goals agreed upon with NATO.
These are over and above the NATO commitments on the part of the United States. And I wondered if Germany, the Federal Republic of Germany, was increasing its expenditures
in any comparable fashion.
We shall do everything what is agreed in the four power negotiations or in the framework of the NATO Council, what is agreed that we have to do to strengthen our military efforts. I wouldn't like to go into details. I am not in a position now to go into details. But what we are told to do as a fair share, as a fair contribution to NATO, including more military units, including increased financial and economical or technical efforts, we shall do.
You will step up your contribution if you are asked to do so, is that correct?
We shall do what we are asked to do and what is agreed in the forthcoming negotiations.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, do you have any question in your mind as to whether Mr. Khrushchev will sign a treaty with East Germany before the end of this year?
You mean whether it's likely that he will sign such a treaty?
Yes.
Well, he has made many announcements of this kind, and I think it's a matter of cautiousness to take his statements at face value. Maybe that in view of some Western actions and actions of determination, he might withdraw from his position. He has already withdrawn several times. There was a 6-month ultimatum in 58, and there was another announcement before the summit meeting in 1960. Both times he withdrew from his position, and I don't exclude the possibility that he will once more retreat, but we shouldn't calculate this possibility. We should be prepared to take his statements at face value, I think.
Suggestions are being made in our press particularly that somehow or other he must save face and that we mustn't push him and that he's very likely to sign this treaty to save face. Now, suppose he does sign this treaty. What do you think the West can do? What do you think West Germany can do if he signs it? Nothing, is there?
Well, the peace treaty, the separate peace treaty, as such, does not add very much to the present factual situation. And it also does not add very much to the legal situation. The peace treaty will once more confirm the recognition of the Oder-Neisse line by the East German government. They have already recognized this line many years ago, and the peace treaty will once more state that the state of war has been terminated. The Soviet Union has declared this also many years ago, so there's not much difference. And I think the main point with the separate peace treaty is that it is a starting point, the propaganda starting point, for another chain of practical actions, and that is the important point.
May I add something? You say, what can West Germany do, or what can the Western powers do? If a peace treaty is concluded, I think it will be a part of the peace treaty that Soviet Russia pretends to have no more commitments and no more rights as far as the access to Berlin is concerned. Therefore, for an example, if the Western powers would send a note of protest to Moscow against this peace treaty, Moscow could say, or would say, we are the wrong address, and could reject this note of protest and could advise the Western powers to send this note of protest to the German communist regime. And that is what I have emphasized many times in my discussions here in this country, that the immediate aim of the communists is not to incorporate West Berlin in the Soviet bloc. The immediate aim, the next aim, is to achieve an increasing degree of diplomatic recognition of the communist regime in Germany in order to legalize illegal steps, and so on.
Mr. Whistler, on this business of the wrong address, you and others have talked about certain economic countermeasures that you can use against the East German communists in the event of trouble over Berlin. Could you tell us two things about that? What specifically you have in mind about economic countermeasures, and at what point do you apply them? Do you apply them at the point a separate peace treaty is signed and the Russians attempt to turn over to the East Germans their responsibilities?
That depends upon what we shall read in the peace treaty. To say that the Berlin problem is not primarily a military problem. Of course, political problem. And we should do everything short of war to solve the Berlin problem, to maintain Western rights in Berlin before a military action is seriously considered.
Well, Mr. Minister, the President of the United States has suggested that we're willing to do everything short of war, but we must be necessary for war if Premier Khrushchev continues to press us and threaten our rights in Berlin. Now, I'd like to ask you if you think, again following Mr. Spivak, if you think that if that showdown should occur, can we limit to conventional weapons a war in the heart of Germany?
I think it would be very unwise to play the role of a prophet, to play the role of a wise guy who knows all answers. Because maybe we can decide what we want to do, but we cannot decide what the Soviets are going to do. And the way how we have to react depends upon what the Soviets are doing.
But Mr. Minister, mustn't we be ready for every possible contingency in the Berlin crisis in the coming months?
I couldn't agree more.
Mr. Van Olker.
Mr. Ambassador, you're credited, whether rightly or wrongly, with preparing a memorandum in 1950 Germany.
It's impassive spectrum. It begins with the interzonal trade agreement between the Soviet occupation zone in Germany and the Federal Republic of Germany, and it may lead up to a strategic embargo, not only concerning the German communist regime.
Mr. Van Olker.
But I think it is very unwise to go into details from our side, because to pre-announce what we have in our mind, that is a tremendous advantage for the partner on the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Mr. Minister, the conditions in East Germany are getting very much like they were in the spring of 1953. If there should be an outbreak of rioting, not just in East Berlin, but in the entire East German Republic, what would be the position of the West German government if there were attempts to aid East Germany?
If I understand the background of your question correctly, I would like to answer that no unilateral military action from the side of the Federal Republic of Germany can be considered to help the uprising.
Military action? You don't preclude
no unilateral military action.
You will consult with the United States, Britain, France, the NATO allies.
If NATO decides to do something, we shall take a full share in any kind of action which NATO decides to do.
Gentlemen, we have about 3 minutes remaining. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Minister, President Kennedy has stated that he thought it would be possible to remove some of the irritants in Berlin to which the Russians object, particularly Mr. Khrushchev has objected. What are those irritants? What could be removed that would improve the situation?
I think the President was very correct to state that there is peace in Berlin. It is an abnormal situation because the city is divided, but we had peace all the years in Berlin.
Yes, the fear is about the future, about, frankly stated, about Germany, the fact that Germany has started two world wars in the past, and an anxiety about what a united Germany or a strong Germany would do in the future. This is no secret, it is well known. Does Germany have the ability today to deliver atomic weapons? Are there any atomic weapons in Germany? Does Germany want atomic weapons?
I would like to give a clear explanation of the situation. 1957, the heads of the governments of NATO have decided to provide a tactical nuclear capability for all allies. The details are laid down in the strategic concept MC-70, including the Federal Republic of Germany, the Federal Armed Forces. But that is true for means of delivery, not for warheads. And therefore, if we speak of nuclear weapons, we must be clear in our terminology. We are under NATO commitment. That is not our free decision or our free will. We are under NATO commitment to have a tactical nuclear capability. We never have applied for a national control for the warheads. The warheads are and are going to be under U.S. custody and maintenance. That is a real situation for the German forces.
Then the West German forces do have an atomic capability today, and the warheads are there, are they not?
The warheads are under United States custody and maintenance. That is in compliance with your legal situation. That is in compliance with the NATO agreements, and that we are committed to do or to respect. And we never have applied for a change of this situation.
And you have no intention of doing so in the future?
Gentlemen, I think our defense interests are fully covered by the present situation.
I'm sure a great many more questions could be asked, but I'm going to have to interrupt because I see that our time is up.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. We'll tell you about next week's guest on Meet the Press in just a moment.
That's the identification of Radio Netherlands, comparable to our familiar trademark, the NBC Chimes. This is Morgan Beatty in the NBC newsroom in New York. Foreign radio stations are familiar here because we are in daily contact with correspondents around the world. The result? You get news direct from where it happens throughout the day on NBC Radio News on the Hour.
When the USO is mentioned, what do you think of? Unless you're a member of our armed forces today, most likely you recall memories of World War II. And this is sad, because today, as in time of actual war, the USO is still on the job, in its 20th year of serving those who serve our country all over the world. 2.5 million men and women whose battle for peace is every bit as severe and lonely a job as fighting a war. Half of these GIs are under 25. Half are away from home for the first time. They need the USO for that vital time out of battle, that important measure of home. And now the USO needs your help to maintain its clubs here and in 27 countries throughout the world, potentially explosive areas where the war of nerves is matched only by the GI's battle against loneliness. As President Kennedy has said, winning the peace is a lonely battle. Support the USO, either directly or through your United Fund or Community Chest. Our Meet the Press panel today included Sandra Van Oker, NBC News, Richard Wilson, Kohl's Publications, Peter Lissagore, Chicago Daily News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press discussion, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press. That's M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. Next week, Meet the Press will present a special one-hour program on foreign aid and will have as its guests Senator J.W. Fulbright and Congressman Otto Passman. This is NBC.